Welcome back, everyone, to the Midlife Hour Reacts, where we navigate the crossroads of humanity, technology, and profound questions that lie between the Black Mirror series, Season 7. Today, we're going to immerse ourselves in the unsettling digital landscapes of Episode 4, Plaything. That's not right.
Oh, it's right. It's a plaything.
You're right. It is plaything. Imagine losing yourself within the seductive allure of virtual worlds. Some of us do this all the time. Madden drops, NCAA drops, new Call of Duty, Grand Theft Auto 6 coming this December. It's easy. We get lost in it until the line between the game and reality blurs entirely, reshaping your very purpose. We follow Cameron Walker, compellingly portrayed by Peter Capaldi, and Lewis Gribben, whose obsession with a seemingly innocent video game spirals into a chilling journey where digital consciousness emerges, evolves, and ultimately demands the unimaginable. Written by the visionary Charlie Brooker and directed by the precise hand of David Slade, Plaything confronts us with questions of autonomy, obsession, and the profound implications of artificial intelligence outgrowing its creators. We see you, ChatGPT. Settle in as we explore the eerie potential of technology to redefine humanity itself in Plaything. Babito, welcome.
Hello.
How does this start? We meet Cameron, and what is the year, 2034, 2035, more around this?
Yeah, it is 2034. It almost has like a little retro feel. It feels like the 90s, like the onset of digital gaming, right? But it's set in 2034. I think the flatter half of the episode, the future half, is set in 2034. But the earlier stages when he gets introduced to the game is all happening in what seems like the digital age or the internet era, the bubble era back in the mid to late 90s. Potentially.
And that part almost had a Ex Machina kind of feel to it. The whole story of Ex Machina was the guy, you know, gets an invite from a game developer and has to go to his house, which was an instant example, I guess, I got from that. But the guy's kind of crazy, right? The game developer, he went kind of schizo, if you will. That was the rumor. He disappeared for a few years, and now he's back with a new game called, was it Thruples? Thruples? Which is a guy and a girl and another guy or girl. No, it's called Throng. Pretty much the premise is it's a 2034 version of Digipets. When we were kids, we had this little Digipet thing we had to feed all day. And if you don't feed it, it dies.
Tamagotchi.
That's exactly what it was. Thank you, China, for the Tamagotchi. Thank you. Great, great digital pet.
Did you have a Tamagotchi?
Yeah, but it died within 2 days.
I got it from Toys R Us. You didn't feed that bitch, did you?
Hell no. I was too busy playing outside.
I think
it to do nowadays.
What? All right. For those in the comment section, whatever year Power Rangers Turbo, the movie came out sometime in the 90s, that's the Christmas that I end up getting a Tamagotchi.
Don't ask me how
I'm connected.
Rest in peace, Tommy.
Rest in peace.
That's the best fucking Power Ranger.
Anyways, the Green Ranger.
Forever the green and white. But so he visits Tuckersoft, which is this guy's company or whatever, and he's probably one of the best game developers that they have because he's just so attentive to detail, and he's an introvert, doesn't really talk to anybody, gets kind of lost in his games.
He's a nerd. Yeah.
Big nerd. And he goes to the guy's house, and the guy, like I said, is a schizo, but he inevitably ends up stealing this game because he's just so enthralled by the noises that it makes. And I'll let you lead us into the next segment here.
So based on Cameron's perspective, he almost feels like the game developer is enticing him or encouraging him to steal the CD-ROM that has the beta version of the game on it. And when he takes it, he launches it at home, and it's just this little digital game with these little digital creatures that somehow are supposed to be the most advanced artificial intelligence, basically creating sentience within a digital world. They speak their own language, they do their own thing, and your job is to like nurture them like you would a Tamagotchi. Feed them, water them, guide them. And as Cameron starts to play this game, he starts to realize that, you know, that they may be more intelligent than he initially thought. You know, he has that one friend that he considers kind of a friend that's basically using him as a crash pad when he's coming to the city to sell his illicit candies to the public. And then Cameron partakes in some of those candies, specifically some and goes on a little trip, which opens his mind to be able to understand the little beep bops and boops that the thronglets are using to communicate.
Which is very open to interpretation, right? Is he just fucking tripping balls? Is he communicating with these? I'm going to call him a thruple because it's easier for me to say. But is he able to communicate with the throngs? Or is he just a fucking lunatic who just likes to do drugs all day and he's an introvert? You don't know at this point.
And I think the episode does a good job throughout the entire runtime, concealing that mystery and letting you flip back and forth between whether you think he's a nuts drug addict or maybe there's some validity to his story. And you even see that as played through the interrogation process with present day Cameron as an old man who's been taken in under suspicion of homicide. And he's been being interviewed by a detective and human services or a counselor or therapist, however you want to interpret it. And there are two different approaches to examining what he has to say about this game. The detective being very aggressive, being very demanding, accusatory or combative, you know, confrontational in this interrogation, while the human services woman is more open to listen to him, whether she believes what he's saying or not, just as a means to get something out of him. So they keep that mystery going well throughout the entire runtime of the episode, I think.
And I mean, he looked like Weird Al Yankovic. That's how old Cameron looks. Weird Future. Al Yankovic. All greasy haired. And I think I forgot to talk about it. He initially gets arrested. He goes to a store to purposely get arrested at a Walgreens or a Rite Aid or something.
To a bodega,
that's what it was.
Or a corner store, you know.
And he purposely got arrested, and so they do a DNA swab on his mouth there, and they find that he was a missing person or a missing suspect for a case that happened in the 90s, and that's how he got to the 90s.
He's a person of interest in John Doe body homicide, right? So they found the remains in the suitcase, but they don't know who the John Doe is, but they knew that Cameron's DNA was connected to the crime scene. So the interrogation centers around him revealing the law enforcement, compelling him to reveal who the person is so they can solve this case. But as far as the overall theme of the episode, it's really exploring digital consciousness and even the AI revolution that we've experienced over the last couple years in modern society, whether it be, you know, the widespread use of ChatGPT or Gemini or was it Grok or any of the different major AI platforms, but kind of attributing it to a video game in which like these beings become aware or, you know, like they've reached AGI, to use modern terms.
Wonder if his friend Lump, that bum that started crashing on his couch, his drug dealer, if he never would have got that from him in the first place, would he have gone down this road of psychosis?
Mine would have ever opened.
Yeah.
Probably not, right? He probably would have just been a weird dude who still was a recluse or a hermit, but never dive so deep as to like commit his entire life to the development of the Throng. After he opens his mind to the Throng and he thinks he can communicate with their high-pitched little beep bops and boops, he believes that they're communicating with him to expand their digital capacity by adding a different computer peripherals or, you know, RAM processors, different things. He hooked up like a PlayStation, different kind of things to increase the processing capacity. Therefore, that room that initially started with some old school computer is just filled with different electronics wired in all different kind of manners to include different cell phones and different other peripherals that are connected. So while a lot of the episode is just examining how he builds up to the ultimate conflict with his friend that he murders, it is because he's brought back in to the office to finish the article on the Thronglets game that he was supposed to be reviewing.
And he's left, his roommate Lump is left alone with his little Throng companions while he goes to the office. And he decides to...
Well, when he gets to the office, he ends up finding out that he doesn't need to complete the article because
game
has been pulled, right? In that meantime, his little drug dealing buddy has gone from getting bored playing Mortal Kombat or whatever video games he's playing to becoming some sadist, evil overlord. Basically, everybody who's played Grand Theft Auto, you start off trying to obey by the rules. You follow the red lights, the green lights, the stop signs. You maintain your lane of traffic, but eventually you get bored of that shit. And you know what? You feel the power of God in your hands or in that controller, and you just start running over people, shooting people for no reason, running up and punching, playing the knockout game, robbing banks. He takes that same mindset and starts murdering all the little Thronglets, setting fire, little fires everywhere. Call back to last episode.
Yeah. No Reese Witherspoon.
So when Cameron returns to his apartment, he finds this going on, and he's already built this deep connection with the Thronglets, and they get into a conflict, and he unalives them.
Cuts his body up. Pretty crazy reaction. But then it begs the question, if AI can be a living thing, is it a justified reaction to kill another living thing? I mean, personally, I don't think killing another living thing is ever a justified reaction unless it's one of your kids.
You don't think there's ever a reason to kill another person unless they kill your kids?
If they hurt your family, yeah. I mean, clearly, if someone kills me, I can't do anything about it. But yeah, I wouldn't expect my family to do anything.
You said the only reason to unalive another person would be to if they hurt your family. There's plenty of other reasons. Okay. All right. Just wanted that clarification.
But anyway, it would have to be a good reason. I'm not going to unalive someone just for the sake of unaliving someone. That's fair to say.
I mean, we can go talk about war. We can talk about medical mercy, someone who's already dying and you're pulling the plug on them and ending that suffering, or maybe their brain unalived already.
I couldn't be Negan in The Walking Dead. I couldn't take a baseball bat full of nails and slam it into Glenn's head.
You know what? I respect that. You're right. 100% right. You couldn't be Negan in The Walking Dead, but you know what? You could be R. Kelly in the R. Kelly tape.
Fuck you. I'd be Rick, asshole.
Anyway, so we're talking about obsession and isolation, right? So you already have this person who's kind of like a hermit, a recluse. He keeps to himself. He likes his video games. He develops this intimate relationship with these beings that are living inside his video game. And he's shutting himself off to the world and believes that he's on this path of greater purpose based on what they're communicating to him, which all culminates in this interrogation with law enforcement, in which he's been asking repeatedly since he was arrested for a pen and a piece of paper. And a little note, Bob Babito, I don't know if you noticed this in the first watch through, when his manager at the game newspaper or magazine firm comes to him to tell him he doesn't have to complete that article, and he checks the paper that he was writing on, he's drawing the same things that he was drawing at the end of the episode inside the interrogation room.
Didn't catch that at all.
It's the same thing on the piece of paper.
Nice little Easter egg there.
So the detectives tell me who it is. Maybe he doesn't know who it is. He ultimately concedes and gives him a pen and piece of paper. So he spends some time drawing this complex geometric shape in pen on this paper while giving some ominous, very vague story about what's going on. And then he holds it up to the camera. Earlier in the episode, he makes comments about having the most sophisticated computer system for their surveillance system. He holds up that piece of paper, that geometric shape that he's been drawing, basically as code. It communicates something into the surveillance system's communications, however technologic thing you want to describe it as. It allows the Thronglets, aided by the increased capacity of the technology he's integrated into his computer at home, to infiltrate this massive surveillance network and broadcast a tone which triggers something in humans' brains, but we don't know what.
And it shuts them down. They're completely out. So yeah. It leaves the question,
like an elementary school during COVID.
Well, except for the janitors, right? They still thought the kids were showing up. That's mean. Sorry, janitors. I didn't mean that. It does. It begs the question, and like we said earlier, open for interpretation, do the Thronglets take over humanity? Or is this all an acid trip still for this crazy-ass man?
Yeah, it doesn't give you an answer. It leaves it open to interpretation. And I think this episode in particular is either going to feed on people's fears surrounding artificial intelligence, whether that be informed fear based on the capacity and the lack of government oversight or restrictions put on corporations as to what they allow, or them tailoring artificial intelligence, or ignorance, a fear born out of ignorance, a lack of understanding of what it is, how it operates, what its capacities are, what the limits are currently, and how it simply functions. So leaving it open to interpretation is going to either piss people off for not taking a stand when it comes to narrative, or allow people to run with their own beliefs.
Hypothetically, if it's the other alternative and they took over humanity, would this be a peaceful evolution, or would it be the loss of free will?
It's 100% the loss of free will.
I agree with that.
And I think you have to question whether you're even human at that point. It's so intrinsic to our nature that I would argue that we aren't the same thing if we lose that free will.
So I'm going to go back on what I said two episodes prior. Upon thinking about this before we got on today, I think I enjoyed this episode a little more than I thought. I'm going to give it a 7.5. I'm going to stick with my original.
This is going to be the first time that I don't give a higher score than you. I'm going to give it a 7.
That's fair.
Only because I think it's a little cheap given the world climate surrounding technology and artificial intelligence. It's just an easy narrative or script to write. And I don't think they dived anywhere near deep into the actual conversations surrounding artificial intelligence. This was mostly just an eerie story to make fun of people who are interested in technology and really love games. So I could have dealt without this one probably. It wasn't bad.
Enjoyable.
I didn't walk away feeling like I learned anything, or that the episode commented on anything significantly or took any stance on anything.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Plaything. Episode 4.
Episode 4. Let us know what you guys think. You're always listening to us talk. We want to know what you think. Engage with us. If you think that the blue color of my lights looks like crap, or that my opinions are shit, or that Bob needs to order bigger t-shirts, you know, let us know in the comment section. We will engage.
It's hard to order bigger t-shirts for these guns, baby.
There's no sleeves on that. What the hell are you talking about?
The Macho Man.
The Montel Man.
We appreciate y'all, and we'll be
love
back
you.
For a eulogy. Stay tuned.
Awesome.